Scott Mingay joins us from the USGA, and they have a really awesome product that when I got the release about it, I just knew we had to have a conversation about this. The product is called GS3, and I'll leave it to you because this is an audio format, but to kind of explain to people what this ball-looking thing does and why it really is so incredible.
Thanks, Ryan. Yeah, we're certainly pretty excited about everything that's come out here in the last couple of weeks. And I mean, from the show to Twitter to everything about it, just the overwhelming positivity we've gotten is fantastic. So the GS3 really to us, it's a state-of-the-art golf ball. You cannot hit it with a club, right? If you do, it'll be the last time you ever hit it with a golf club. But inside of the ball is a bunch of sensors. It's the same size and weight as a golf ball. But what a superintendent can do with it is drop it on the putting green, and it gives them a measure of firmness, so how hard the ball is going to bounce on the green. And then they can roll it on the green to tell a green speed. But really what we're most excited about is that it also gives a measure of what we're calling smoothness and trueness, which is how bumpy the green is or how much the ball is snaking around. And really, these are two new metrics that we haven't been able to subjectively measure on a golf course really ever. And so we're quite excited to give this as a tool to courses to help improve the performance of putting greens for golfers.
Is this kind of a, for lack of a better term, a multi-tool? Does this take a bunch of tools that supers have been using, maybe not render them obsolete, but put them into one thing?
It really does. So, you know, prior to this, you know, some superintendents had different ways of measuring putting green firmness. Almost every superintendent had a stip meter for doing green speed, but they didn't have anything for smoothness or trueness. It was very subjective. And so they're carrying around a bunch of devices, kind of putting data everywhere. And what this does is one device allows them to quickly and accurately measure all four of those metrics. It streams it right back to their phone, so it's there on the cloud, and they can access it everywhere. And it certainly, you know, we think is going to make things quite a bit easier to collect data on a golf course.
What is that smoothness metric? How is that measured, and what does that spit out as for a range for a superintendent?
The smoothness metric, we've gotten probably the most questions on. It's the newest thing that we have. And so the way we like to describe it is, you know, if you were to roll the ball on a billiards table, you'd get zero. It'd be perfectly smooth, no bumps. If you were to roll it on freshly aerated greens, you'd get somewhere around 15 to 17. And if you rolled it on most typical greens, you'd see a range of like 3 to 7. And so, you know, a way this is able to be used is to say, you know, how quickly do my greens recover after an aeration event, for example, right? Or, you know, if my greens are at a level that my membership and my golfers thinks is very good, I can put a number to that and then manage that, right? Or if I'm at some place where I think I want to improve, again, I can see where the number is and say, okay, do I need to get better? Do I need to stay the same? And that's a really great way to add some, you know, quantitative measures to the performance of the greens.
Are supers going to be inclined to use that smoothness metric as a comparison point to other clubs for better or for worse? Or do you think most supers will kind of keep that within a range to manage to their own facility?
We really think it's best used when you're managing to a range in your own facility. And like we said, a very popular, you know, use case that we're seeing so far is looking at aeration events and different cultural practices. So the maintenance practices that the superintendent's doing at your golf facility, and being able to use that to gauge recovery time, and then also gauge, you know, day to day, how are we trending? And that's what we think is most important is, you know, where is your facility at? You know, do you want to assess what it takes to stay there? Do you want to assess what it takes to get slightly better? Or do you want to assess, you know, how quickly do we recover after we do different things? And we think that's the most productive use of this tool.
Do you foresee a scenario where supers, clubs, what have you, will take some of this data, particularly around maybe firmness of greens, and maybe measure it based on time of day or temperature or a rain event, for example, just to give information and an education to their players or members about, hey, at this time of day, the golf course is firmer or softer, or here's when it plays mm-hmm. in certain conditions.
Yeah, and it goes beyond firmness to even smoothness. Like, what does foot traffic do to a putting green, right? We all know that the start of the day is going to look a lot different than the end of the day. And so one of the things that we introduced in the Deacon app, which is our platform and our app of where all this data goes, is we call it days in target. And what that's really saying is that for that target range that your golf course wants to hit, how many days do they spend within that target for those metrics? And so as a communication vehicle back to membership or key stakeholders, we can start to evaluate how consistent is the course performing? And if we're outside those targets, did it happen because, you know, like a couple of weeks ago in some areas of the country, we got 4 inches of rain in a couple of days, and we never get rain, right? So yes, the course is going to be a little soft those days, and we're not going to be in target. But again, we're able to communicate back why with data, which we think is really important.
For players that are, I don't know, maybe they're picky about the time of day that they want to play golf. Are they able to kind of get a sense of what that data looks like across multiple different courses? Is there any kind of publicly accessible component to this where someone can go, hey, you know, these greens tend to be smoother and we can play at 11 in the morning. We want to go here as opposed to maybe this facility that's firmer and faster at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly something we're not going to get in the middle of. You know, we think that the tools that we made they're very much for a superintendent, and they're meant to help the superintendent and the golf facility, you know, best manage the expectations that their membership has or their golfers have. And, you know, some places like to share more information than others. But ultimately, it's what we want to do is help use data to communicate. You know, is the membership or is the golfers happy? If they are, right, we can say that if they're playing in the afternoon and they wish conditions were a little better, well, we can have a discussion now around what better means, and but also what it's going to take to get there, right, and whether that's realistic given the budget of the facility or not.
For you guys at the USGA, what was the process like of developing this? How long did it take? Obviously, you guys have poured significant money into developing this. What did that look like, and did it match what you originally set out to do when you first started this project?
So we're a little over a decade in the making now of working on this in some form or fashion. Obviously, the Snip Meter has been around for a very long time. We introduced the True Firm. You know, a little over 10 years ago, the Measure Firmness. And ever since then, we've been looking for ways to continuously improve that, right? Just like any company, right? It's how do we innovate? How do we come up with the next thing? And then really for us, there were some things around, you know, Chambers Bay and different golf courses of assessing smoothness of the greens that I think for us, the light bulb went off of, hey, what if we could put a sensor in a golf ball? Was a question a few of us batted around, and we laughed at first, and then we said, well, what if we could put a sensor in a golf ball? And then, years later, here we are in 23 and we have a sensor in a golf ball that, like I said, you can't hit, but it at least experiences the same things that golf ball would experience on a putting green. And so I think in the spirit of, did we achieve what we wanted to? Absolutely. It's certainly been a very fun process to be a part of with a really great team to develop this technology.
What was the moment like for the team when you felt like, all right, we've got this. We've got this nailed, and now we can put this out to the marketplace?
I would say probably in the middle of last summer. You know, like anything new and innovative, right? You know, some of the early prototypes, people are looking at them, and they're like, you guys are going to you're gonna put that out there? Like, this is what we got, right? And so, last year, we worked out quite a few manufacturing opportunities of how to manufacture this, right? How do you balance a bunch of sensors inside of a ball? How do you mass produce these to a level that meets golf course demands? And so we overcame some of those hurdles. And I remember last summer, we were doing the tour of visiting a ton of facilities, testing this. I personally got to go to a bunch of the USGA championships and test it on site. And we started seeing the results come in and how accurate the device was, how easy it was to use. We're giving it to volunteers. We're doing, tests and golfer experience ratings around aeration events and how quickly greens heal. And I think it was around that point that a lot of us started looking at each other and said, we really got something here. And from that point on, it was full steam ahead of getting ready for this trade show to make an unveiling of it.
So what has been the response from supers that are using it, supers that are maybe have heard about it from fellow peers in the industry, and the reaction overall from the GCSAA conference?
For the superintendents that are using it, they love it. That they're asking, how can we get another one? How can we add a different chart? How do we correlate this? What does this number mean? They are very excited, and they're using the device heavily. For everyone who doesn't have one, the first question is, well, where can I buy one? When can I get it? When are you guys coming down to my area? So that's a really, it's a really fun part of all of this. But certainly, coming out of the GCSA show, which is for those listeners that don't know, it's the biggest turf show that we have in our industry. And the outcome of that was just tremendous. The amount of buzz that we had in our booth. There's a couple times I thought we were gonna get in trouble because we're spilling into the aisles and we didn't have enough room in the booth, and we're gonna get yelled at that we needed a bigger booth or something. But it's just been tremendous, and everybody's really excited about having some new metrics and having an actionable tool from the USGA that's really just focused on how do we make golf better, how do we help improve golf courses or give data to talk to stakeholders. So that's something new. It's something new for the USGA. And I think it's just really refreshing and fun for everybody.
What is the life cycle of a product? How long can it last and accurately measure before you got to grab yourself another one?
So the ball itself is wirelessly charged. So you charge it just about every night. It should last about 36 to 70 hours or so. As far as the actual life cycle of the ball, we believe it's somewhere around 4 years. Okay. The way it works with us is that when you buy it, for now, you maintain a subscription to our software, and then every 3 years we would refresh the device for you, just to be well ahead of that cycle.
Gotcha. And are facilities buying one, or are they using six? I mean, how are they trying to make this part of their workflow?
For many customers, like any new tech, right, you start off with one and you see how it goes. I would say for us so far, it's been pretty unanimous that everyone buys one and they're asking for a second. So, one to two per course seems about right. Usually you have a crew working the front nine, a crew working the back nine. We would anticipate somewhere around that model to continue forward.
And ultimately for the USGA, I mean, you guys do tons of turf grass and agronomy research. How does this data, if at all, help you in advancing that work that you're doing?
It's already advancing that work. We have quite a few research programs going on. Dr. Cole Thompson heads our Mike Davis program for advancing golf course research. And we have researchers all over the country using this device to look at, how different maintenance practices, how different products, impact these metrics. And so, everything that we're doing is focused on, what do these metrics mean? How do we control them? What actually influences them, and all of that research, we hope we'll make publicly available and then put it through our Deakin app as well.
For folks, whether they're in the industry or they're just golfers and they're interested and they want to learn more about this, is there a resource that they can find at the USGA's website to learn more about GS3?
Yeah. So check out USGA.org. And then you can also navigate over to our site, which is gssshop.usga.org, to learn more about everything that the Green Section does for the golf course industry.
Well, Scott, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. Can't wait to see more about the data. As a huge data geek myself, I'm very much looking forward to what all of this stuff is going to come out of GS3. So thank you for taking the time to talk to us about it.
Thanks, Ryan. Thanks for having us on the show.